Today's Food for the Journey will be a classic reflection of today's readings.
So good, so kind, so merciful, so just, so pure.
Hello, brothers and sisters. Welcome to Food for the Journey, and welcome to the readings for this Sunday, the seventh Sunday in Ordinary Time. These readings, brothers and sisters, reflect the very clear, unambiguous call of the gospel in relation to the way in which we treat others. We've been speaking all week about our intentions and our motivations, but now we need to look at, well, actually how those intentions and motivations are genuinely revealed by the way we treat one another. You know, we can have all kinds of good spiritual talk, so to speak. We can talk well, but it's how we live and how we relate that really shows what the thoughts and the intentions of our heart are. So let's take a look at these readings and be prepared to be challenged. The first one is taken from the first book of Samuel, chapter 26. Beginning with verse 2. 1 Samuel 26. In those days, Saul went down to the desert of Ziph with 3,000 picked men of Israel to search for David in the desert of Ziph. So David and Abishai went among Saul's soldiers by night and found Saul lying asleep within the barricade with his spear thrust into the ground at his head, and Abner and his men sleeping around him. Abishai whispered to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your grasp this day. Let me nail him to the ground with one thrust of the spear. I will not need a second thrust." But David said to Abishai, "Do not harm him. For who can lay hands on the Lord's anointed and remain unpunished? It's the Lord who called him. I can't take revenge into my own hands." So David took the spear and the water jug from their place at Saul's head, and they got away without anyone seeing or knowing or awakening. All remained asleep because the Lord had put them into a deep slumber. Going across to an opposite slope, David stood on a remote hilltop at a great distance from Abner, son of Ner, and the troops. And he said, "Here is the king's spear. Let an attendant come over and get it. The Lord will reward each man for his justice and faithfulness. Today, though the Lord delivered you into my grasp, I would not harm the Lord's anointed." So instead of killing him, they take his spear to show that they've been there, that they actually had been there, and then they call out to him from a distant hill and let him know that "I was there and I could have killed you, and I did not, because I will not harm the Lord's anointed." It says here, the Lord is kind and merciful, and that's what David exhibited here. Saul has become his enemy because Saul is jealous of David. He's jealous of the honor that people give him. He's jealous of how people are willing to follow him and listen to him in place of himself. And he lets jealousy take over. And David's saying, "Even though I could have killed you, I did not." That takes a big man to do that. David exemplified it here. Let's move on to the gospel. Jesus said to his disciples, and this is found in Luke 6, 27 to 38. "To you who hear, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. To the person who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other one as well. From the person who takes your cloak, do not withhold even your tunic. Give to everyone who asks of you. And from the one who takes what is yours, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. For if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend money to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners and get back the same amount. But rather, love your enemies and do good to them and lend, expecting nothing back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Stop judging, and you will not be judged. Stop condemning, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and gifts will be given to you. Good measure, packed together, shaken down, and overflowing, will be poured into your lap. For the measure with which you measure will in return be measured out to you. It's another way of saying the way you treat others, you will be treated. God looks upon us, brothers and sisters. No man is an island. We are joined with one another, as was God's intention that we become one body. The way you treat others will be the way the Lord treats you in the end. The manner in which you have treated others will be reflected back to you in the day of judgment. Now, how willing are you, how willing am I, to really look at that and to say, would I want to be treated the way I'm treating so-and-so? What am I going to do about it? David had been attacked. Saul had tried to kill him. Saul had been so jealous of him, always speaking against him, always attacking him, always undermining him, hounding him. David decided not to do the same in return. How do you treat your enemies? Or how do you treat those who irritate you, annoy you? Do you do good to them? The measure with which you measure will in return be measured out to you. Brothers and sisters, there's not a verse in the gospel that's idle. There just isn't. Every verse in the gospel is power-packed for us. And we can't say, we can't pick and choose. We can't say, I'll take this and not this. This is the whole gospel. And you know, if we try to take the whole gospel at once, we'll choke on it. We can't do it. But step by step, we can. If we open ourselves to God. Not long ago, I came across an article in a magazine called Inside the Vatican. And it was the November issue of 2006. And in it, there was an article by a priest, a Canadian priest, Father Bernard O'Connor. And I just want to share with you an article that he wrote, a portion of the article, because it bears very much on the gospel today. He says, just over 20 years ago, while pursuing doctoral studies and research in the 1980s, I had the opportunity to provide pastoral assistance to various European dioceses. In one such instance, I was invited to a lovely rural area of coastal England. The custom of parishioners was to, quote, book, end of quote, specific dates throughout the year when they wanted masses celebrated for their deceased family and loved ones. It did not come as a surprise then when a lady arrived at the rectory and requested 10 such mass intentions. Each was to be registered as intention of the donor, with no other information. She observed that I was new to the vicinity and therefore decided to share with me her secret about the person for whom she had asked that these masses be offered. What she next related to me was remarkable. This was an elderly woman who vividly recalled events during World War II when England was bombed day and night, especially throughout London and Coventry. She lost many relatives and friends because of the Blitz. She had two children. A son who became a Royal Air Force pilot served during the Battle of Britain, which was July to October of 1940. This combat is remembered as the first major battle to be fought entirely in the air, and it dealt a heavy blow to the German Air Force. In those 4 months, 498 British pilots lost their lives. Among them was this woman's son. As would be expected thereafter, she continually prayed for God's mercy and for the repose of the soul of her son. But annually, she also arranged that 10 masses be celebrated for the person most responsible for her son's death. She explained that whoever that man was, he was among those deceived by the Nazi ideology, and that he would have had to live with his conscience when the war's end proved the diabolic reality of the Third Reich. Whoever he was, she said, he stood in need of forgiveness, God's and mine. She was willing to set aside feelings of righteous anger and to move beyond all desire to exact vengeance, even under the guise of justice. She explained her concern for this stranger's salvation, for the well-being of his probable wife and children, for the pain of his memories. When I recall meeting this woman, this exceptional witness of the church's belief in the healing power of forgiveness, I cannot help but also think of a passage from Vatican II's Decree on Missionary Activity, Ad Gentes. In Article 8, we read, "It is only by putting to death what is old that we are able to come to a newness of life. By himself and by his own power, no one is completely rid of his sickness or his solitude or his servitude. Throughout history, the gospel has been truly a leaven of liberty and progress, a leaven of unity and peace." Brothers and sisters, this woman exemplified the heart of the gospel. She exemplified the heart of the gospel for today. This unknown woman, I don't know her name, but she lived the gospel to the hilt, even losing her only son. She lived the gospel to the hilt. She is a genuine Christian. Brothers and sisters, I pray that that grace be given to each of us, that we too might be able to stop judging and not be judged, stop condemning, forgive and be forgiven. May God give us that grace. Hello, brothers and sisters. This is Sister Ann Shields, and I want to encourage you, if you would like a free copy of my booklet, Faith More Precious Than Gold, which we need right now, you can receive that by calling our 800 number, 1-800-282-4789, or you can simply go to renewalministries.net/FFJ. May God bless you.